My name is Kirsty Rayner, and I am obsessed with all things mindset, meditation, business, and helping you to overcome those mindset blocks and magical breakthroughs in every season of life. I'm a multiple business owner, accredited transformational and mindset coach, Vedic meditation teacher, a yogi with 10 years marketing experience on paper, but informally, I'm obsessed with growth, a pale rosé wine lover, chocoholic, and your new bestie. We get into all the secrets and hacks to get you in an abundant mindset. So go and grab a coffee, get cozy, get comfortable. This is the Mindset and Me podcast. Welcome back to the Mindset and Me podcast. Thank you so much for being here again for another week. On the episode today, I have the most incredible guest, Jada Caesar. I'm sure a lot of you are following her already, but if not, she is a woman that has truly changed and disrupted the industry. She started out modeling over 10 years ago as a plus size model when that didn't exist. She started to create organic content on her Instagram, pitch herself to photographers. She built a career from nothing. Since then, she's been on the cover of Women's Health. She's traveled all over the world. She was the face of London Fashion Week. She is an inspiration to so many, as well as running a marathon with Bryony Gordon in her lingerie. We will get into it. She's trained in neuroplasticity, in blockchain, and is all about empowering women to reinvent themselves, to develop, to grow, and to not be afraid to change. She's also an ambassador for the UN. Welcome to the podcast, Jada.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm well. I'm keeping warm because it's so cold at the moment. I hate being that person that talks about the weather, but I am going to be that person because I've got like 100 layers on. And thankfully, my camera's turned off because I basically just look like a unprofessional, cozy, stay at home, trying to pretend that I'm working, looking kind of person. I'm actually going through a big career transition at the moment. So every day is different. Some days I wake up and I feel completely like, what the hell am I doing? Other days I'm really energized. Today has been one of those days where I've been getting through the to-do list. So I'm feeling proud of myself. And the house is looking clean and tidy. You know, when you're on top of the little things,
yeah,
it makes the bigger things feel a lot more copable.
Yeah, totally. Just to preface as well, I am also looking like some sort of work at home sloth, like definitely in that type of outfit. There's no cameras on today. We're both just doing audio. It feels good. We're like on the same level. So thank you so much. One thing that really stood out for me about you, and I've followed you for years, and we'll really get into the story, but I really love when I was like looking through your website and doing a bit of research, how you call yourself a creator, an advocate, and a change maker. And I really want to talk about those three elements and why they're so poignant to you.
Okay. It's actually really hard to define yourself in little sound bites because I think there's so much context that can be missed. And coming up with three words to describe myself since taking away the label of being a model or being a specific job title was really, really difficult. But I think I've always been a creator in many different ways. With my work, I've always been an advocate and used my platform to raise attention and bring a voice to charities and organizations and ideas that people never maybe considered or weren't accepting of or didn't know about. And change maker has always been my pioneering streak and seeing what could be done differently and how people can feel better about themselves with that change. I've got a stubborn streak to me as well. So when I feel like something just doesn't make sense, I don't hesitate to question it. For example, in the fashion industry, and I'm sure we'll get into more detail around that, but growing up and not seeing my curves or women that look like me or women that look like what the majority of people in the street looked like for me was really confusing and suggested that change and disruption needed to be had in that area.
Yeah, I mean, you've summarized that amazingly. And I definitely wanted to kind of start really at the beginning. So I just want to really know, like, what age did that kind of come into fruition where you're seeing this and you're thinking, I want to be the change? Like, to have the confidence in that is obviously really bold.
I think it all really happened accidentally and then organically, and I found my feet and voice as it went on. So I was studying my master's. It was around, I can't remember the year, but I was around like 23. So like a decade ago now, because I'm about to turn 33. But at that time I was working with a lot of young girls. Big up the 30s, yeah. I was working with a lot of young girls and girls that had eating disorders and other body dysmorphia and ideas of themselves, and as well as other mental health difficulties. And I realized that I had never felt necessarily hung up on my body to a point where I hated it, because although I did stand out, I'm 5'9", I've always been curvier than my friendship groups. Even in my teenage years, I grew boobs and hips a lot earlier than my peers, and always felt like I stood out, but it never got me down, because I had great support networks around me. I had messaging from my friends that, you know, that didn't matter to them. Their core values weren't about the way we looked and those type of things, like superficial, very front layer ideas. You know, don't get me wrong, as kids we're all into, you know, those like we want to look cute, or you know we have those certain pressures as all kids, I'm sure, growing up and adolescents do. But it never got to me where I really had to question my whole identity. And I put it down to having great family, really good messaging from my dad, who was like, right, what do you enjoy doing? Let's get you into violin. Like, I had hobbies that were supported. And I know that I'm very lucky to have done so, but it allowed me to have validation in areas outside of my appearance. So I thought, with the kind of mindset I had, why other women can't feel that way too, and noticed that around us was such conflicting messaging about, you know, you're never good enough. Like, buy this mascara because your eyelashes right now are not good enough. Buy this jacket because it will make you feel better and look beautiful than you currently are. And all these ideas just felt, this like marketing, which I understand now on the outskirts, just felt so wrong. And that was our standard. And so I remember coming in at the same time that Instagram had just launched, and decided to create not knowing it at the time, but now I look back, I was like marketing a different type of idea. And the idea was that you are perfect right now. You are beautiful right now. A lot of it is in our mindset. And I would fuse in my psychology degree into the little insight I had. And I would also be a representation of a girl that was basically myself in some ways, because that was the girls I was talking to. And I think off the back of that, it just kind of rolled organically. I was creating content without really thinking about it. It was something I enjoyed, and the content would be me and what I was wearing and where I was going. And I would then create these editorial style images of myself, which when I got into the modeling world, realized it was like test shoots, we would call it. So I was almost like creating these, setting up my own photo shoots and, you know, connect with photographers on Instagram and send them my mood boards and ideas and basically try and sell them this new idea of beauty. And most of them were like, that's weird. I will never shoot like a curvy model. It was because of the way the size I was. And then some were really receptive to it and was like, oh my God, this is actually a really interesting concept. And so off the back of it, I think because I was one of the first, and it was quite a new idea in the UK especially, my images started to gain traction. And then before I knew it, I was asked to be the face of the first ever plus size show during London Fashion Week. And I was scouted by two modeling agents, one of which was one of the best in the UK, and became a part of their very small first plus size division. And from there, I went on and moved to New York and worked out there and lived out there, and then lived in Australia and did Europe and just modeled around the world and took my audience with me and showed them the kind of things that we could achieve. And like my wins was their wins. And, you know, it just was such a beautiful cycle of like support and encouragement. And as much as I was helping them, they were helping me. So, yeah.
Wow, thank you. There's so much detail in there. And I think as well, to just reflect back to you, that you talk in such a, with ease, right? And that, you know, you were doing this thing and you kind of traveled, but actually you took groundbreaking steps within the industry and put yourself out there so boldly. And I really want to know, you know, for somebody maybe who's younger, who's listening to this, what was coming up for you? What was the mindset piece around this?
Good question. I think it was, I was such in a tunnel vision that I wouldn't stop until every girl felt comfortable in their body or advertising completely changed their narrative. Like if there was ever a brand that was promoting an idea that felt one, outdated, unrealistic, or completely ludicrous and actually really detrimental to people's mental health, I would want to work with them and change that. Mm. It did not make sense. I was working with the charity's Young Minds at the time. So I was like helping, consulting on some of their campaigns and just raising awareness to what they did, because they did really fantastic work with young people. And I think at the time it was just this relentless vision of I'm not stopping. And because I had seen that a little old me could, because I didn't come from a fashion background, I didn't get into the role because of any contacts that my parents had or anything. It was pure determination and relentlessness, basically. And because I didn't stop and I saw the effect it was having and the fact that, like, you know, I was the face of this small fashion show that led on to then being the face of like a billboard in Piccadilly with L'Oreal, with their slogan changing from "because I'm worth it" to "we are all worth it because we're all worth it." And like that for me was like, oh, okay. It was just so captivating and exciting and like we could make change. And we were seeing it happen. And then, you know, models started to become more role models. And that was always what I got into this for. And now I feel like a decade on, the industry has come such a long way. And I feel like since lockdown, especially, it made sense to take a step back from it. I feel like my calling had really come to a natural end. There's way more plus size brands than ever before. When I got into it, there was one plus size brand and it was called Evans. And there's way more, like the market segment is huge now. And the amount of models now, like it's so saturated in like the best way. I couldn't have hoped for anything more. Like that's weird to say that I would have wanted more competition, but there's such a bigger next layer to that that made me happier. And so, yeah, I think my enthusiasm for it, there was so much that came into place. Like in my 20s, I had the energy to travel around and, you know, live in a suitcase and it was really exciting and just ticked all my boxes. And that was my mindset, really, I think, at the time.
I love that so much. And it's so right. I really do think your 20s are all about taking risks and just growing and learning and not feeling, I feel there's a lot of pressure on people in their 20s that they have to have it all figured out. And I mean, in your 30s, it just gets better with age, I think, anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, look, and my psychology was woven into what I did, but essentially I went from, my dad thought I was going to be a doctor. He was like, yes, you get your private practice on Harley Street and you made it, basically. Oh. And there's me working, like having like being, having like five different jobs, one modeling job every 2 months and working in fashion. And never did I think, I never could I have predicted that jump. So yeah, I don't think it doesn't matter if you don't have it all figured out, you'll find your way.
Absolutely. I'd love to know as well, thank you for being so open about your journey. Just how did you cope maybe with the knockbacks or the conversation? I know you were really determined, but did anything ever kind of come up for you that might have rocked the boat a little bit? And how did you deal with it specifically?
So my whole 10 years of my career was built around rejection and never ever knowing what the truth of any matter was, because as a model, you are walking into castings where you are in a room with 10 other girls that look exactly like you, that are incredibly beautiful. And you'll go in and as nice as you are and as intelligent as you are, none of that matters, because it's not about you, it's about the brand. And it took me a long time to get my head around the fact that I am having to objectify myself and this isn't a personal thing. So, and because of that, you know, very rarely do you get feedback. So I couldn't go in and say, oh, what was wrong with me? Cause no one's ever going to say, oh, you know, your boobs were too big or your nose wasn't right. Or I don't know, maybe even if it was like, you know, we have actually cast too many brunettes and we actually need a blonde now, or I'm a dark skinned girl. Mm. Like it really, you just never know. So I, as a coping mechanism for that, never expected anything and never got my hopes up until I was on set and had already confirmed the job. Because even if I confirmed a job, the job could come off, casting directors or producers could be sick and it might never go through. Even if I got booked on, like, I remember I got a job that was one of my dream jobs in the Caicos Islands for an incredible campaign.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't believe I was going there until I landed and got off the flight, because I was thinking, wow, something could have gone wrong. And it's a strange attitude to have, being somewhat pessimistic, but it's really helped me to see things a bit more logically and be like, okay, what elements of this can I control? And I think this is another reason why I sort of decided to leave modeling, is there's not really much you can control. And I think that's why a lot of models in the fashion industry tend to look inwards and develop unhealthy habits, to exercise or plastic surgery, because you're constantly thinking you've done something. So for me, one of my other coping mechanisms was upskilling, reading, learning. And I used to fuse a lot of my energy into creating my own content and building my own platform, which was completely mine and I could control.
It's such good advice. And I love the way of upskilling and talking about that, you know, the evolution of every type of experience. There's always a gift, right? Like, what is the gift from this situation? What can I learn? What can I achieve? What can I do better? I think it's really powerful. We were talking before and I really want to talk to you about, if you don't know this, Jada ran a marathon. I'd love to talk about it, because we were just talking before and I was like, I would never be brave enough to do that. So I guess in that moment, you know, you're at the peak of your career, everybody's talking about you, your message, your movement, and then obviously you're doing this. I just want to really understand how it was for you.
Okay, so another moment in my life that I just really put down to luck and being in the right place at the right time, and also having no expectations. So I was asked to go on a retreat with a really popular fitness brand. And as I was on the way to this retreat, we was going into their fitness store to choose some specific items. And I was there looking over the bra table, and just so happens there was a woman next to me called Bridie Gordon, and her and I bonded over the fact that we both had big boobs and always struggled to find bras. And I was like, we're going to be friends for life. And she said to me, I actually do know this really good bra, because I wore it when I ran the London Marathon. And I was like, what? You ran a London Marathon? Like, you ran a marathon in London, wherever you ran that length of time. And she was like, yeah. And I, you know, said, without really ever being a runner or knowing anything about a marathon, except that it's on people's bucket list of things to do, right? And so I said to her, you know, I think I would love to run a marathon too. And she was like, really? Okay. And then the next day I got an email saying, hey, I'm signing you up and let's get training. And I was like, oh wait, what? So we're actually going to do this? She's like, yeah, you said you wanted to. And so I was like, had no expectations, and also didn't know what it entailed on my body, how much that running, what it felt like to run 10K. Like, I'm telling you, I did not even run for a bus. I had never run on like a treadmill for more than like 10 seconds. I had no idea. And so we started this training regime, and I just remember feeling like, this is all so new and so exciting. And I am a true believer that like your mind can take you further than your body can at times. Mm. And so I just was determined to get to the end. And put my mind to it and thought, enjoy the ride. It was so new and exciting. And every training day with Bryony was us chatting and having a laugh and learning about each other. And that got me through with a lot of snacks as well.
Yeah. And also, you ran it in, you were both wearing underwear.
Yeah. So we kind of was training, and halfway through, no, it was actually like a few weeks before the marathon, we decided to do it in our underwear, because we thought, it's one thing seeing two larger ladies running in a space that is predominantly occupied with a lot of slimmer bodies. But then it's something else to be able to also see the cellulite jiggling and wiggling and boobs bouncing everywhere and showing that bodies like ours with fat on their body can move and can, one is like, can do it. So if they can do it, it can inspire others that they can do it too. But also that bodies that have fat on them can also be fit. And I think that's the perception that we really wanted to shift, is that like fitness doesn't look like one thing. And when I grew up, it was like, the girls with like the really flat stomachs and the really thin, like it was a very limited perception of fitness. And I was always like a swimmer growing up. So I swam for 3 years and then I got into yoga recently. I just qualified as a yoga teacher and obviously I ran the marathon. And so I've been in and out of different levels of fitness and hobbies that I've enjoyed, but I never ever looked, even at like my peak training, never looked like a girl that may have been on the cover of Women's Health magazine 5 years ago. I mentioned them particularly because they have really redefined fitness in some ways.
Yeah. Like
having different girls on the cover. I was on their cover in December 2019.
Yeah.
I think they've had like three other plus size women on their covers as well. So yeah, we decided to do it in our underwear and we made sure we became experts in chafing because that's very important. And we were lucky enough to have somebody that accompanied us that carried all of our snacks because that was very important to me because I didn't want to get hungry.
Absolutely. I mean, like fucking hats off to you that you did that. It's unreal. You were you on this morning? I'm pretty sure I saw you on this morning. Yeah.
Yeah,
you were. I remember. And I was just thinking, they are incredible. I mean, I ran a half marathon. I've not run a full marathon. I've done one. So
Congrats.
I probably won't. No, I won't do one again.
You can do it. I honestly think like anyone can run a marathon. And I would say it was probably up there with like one of the best moments of my life.
Right. And
the other benefits of running a marathon besides like getting to the end on the day is that you get structure, you get routine because you have to run. When I was training for the marathon for like 5-6 months or whatever, I would go to events and be like, I'm not drinking because I'm training for the marathon. And everyone would be like, okay. And so not that you need an excuse to give up any kind of alcohol, but for me, it was like, it allowed me to kind of have a goal that I was working towards. And as somebody that is very goal orientated, especially within fitness, I loved having that structure. And then I remember when I joined a running group for the first time being like, wow, this is a way that you can socialize that doesn't involve maybe going out to eat or getting drunk. You know, this is actually a really positive, healthy community of people that are so supportive. And so the whole lifestyle that was wrapped around training for a marathon as well had huge benefits.
It totally. And I think that point about routine, especially we work for ourselves and we're at home and it can be chaotic, like where's the definition between working and not working and the rest and the self-care and the preservation essentially. And I think that actually is really poignant about trying to find and carve out your own routine. So I'd love to now kind of talk about where you are, Jada, because you've had a real change in direction from modeling and your work you do, the things that you've studied in are really incredible. I mean, you work with the UN, like there's so much we could talk about. So I'd love to know kind of where you are now and where your focus is.
So I think in the last 2 years, like I'm sure a lot of people did, we had a lot of time to sit back and reassess where we're at and what we're doing. And for me, it was like a massive pause on the button of this treadmill that I was running on. I literally remember saying to my partner at the time, I never spent enough time to really enjoy my sofa. And then the next day, here we are sitting on the sofa and not leaving the house for 2 years. So I'll never wish that again. But I remember thinking like, I was so busy that I didn't even have time to like have a cup of tea. Like, it was always in and out. And I also loved that. And I think hustle culture was being promoted at the time. It was at its peak and being busy was like congratulated. And I think culturally there's a shift that sort of happened. There's a lot of shifts, but one of which is boundaries replacing burnout and people appreciating just being still and having more time to do the small things like spending it with your children or your partner or going for longer walks in nature, things like that. And I kind of feel like I've had a really grounding last year, literally grounding the aeroplane and stopping, but also grounding and coming back to like my roots and core and foundation. And through that, I've started different areas of interest that I sort of stopped at the very start of my modeling career, which was the psychology and psychotherapy, coming full circle back to them. So in around 3 months ago, I completed, like I said, the yoga teacher training, not to be a yoga teacher, but to understand more of the benefits of what a yoga lifestyle entails. Yoga isn't just the movement, the asana, but it also involves breath work and meditation and self-inquiry and all of those beautiful practices that I think are really vital for us as individuals. And then went on to do a diploma in neuroplasticity and a diploma in blockchain technology, because I started to understand that technology for me has been a pivotal part of my career and being able to connect with the community. Having that community and that audience allowed me to do certain jobs that I may not have been able to do if I was just a model that didn't have a platform or a voice. Like it gave me that authenticity and that sign off for a lot of brands that actually people do care about what she has to say. So maybe we should make some changes too. So I've been looking into like how psychology and technology fuses together, wanting to have more control and moving into business. So I've been learning a lot about business and being a woman in business, investing in business. That's, you know, it's really unlocked a lot, if I'm honest. Like I said, I'm 33, and this is a time where a lot of women sort of come off the career ladder, you know, when they tend to like settle down, have kids, get married, and take some time out. And for me, I'm like, I'm ready to go again. Like, this is just the start, and there's so much more that I need to know and learn how to do. And not only for me, but I think economically, I think this is where women have a really big part. We have a big part to play that is being lost because of societal, like, and I don't always want to go to like society, but like we don't have, there's so many levels to women dropping out of the workplace. And I found that I'm not even really supported in the workplace and thinking about like coming in and maybe having kids. How do you go part-time with that? You know, gender roles and how that is, you know, assumed or split or questioned and challenged. So I've actually had a lot of time to really sit back and think about what does it mean to be a woman at 33, and not just for me, but other women too, and mental health, where are we all at in that sector? How are we all feeling now? How can I contribute to helping people see their full potential now? So thinking of ways in which that manifests. And then also learning about technology in this really new, interesting space that we're moving into with Web3, and how we're moving away from this Web2 version of, you know, a handful of key companies controlling our lives to now a decentralized web. And what does that mean? What does that look like? Decentralized finance, how can that be economically empowering for some people? All of these really interesting concepts, and I'm now trying to like, they're all in a melting pot, and I'm figuring out what's next, what's going to come through all of this.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in there. Absolutely. I feel you. It's some different energy when you're in your 30s. Like, why do we have to make a choice? Why does there have to be that having to put all this pressure on the woman that she has to become less than to look after the children or to do these things? And I completely am there with you. I'm very much the same. I mean, I feel like I could just start again. Like, it, like there's all this energy in you that you have so much to give and to share and get your message out. So it's a really interesting time, and it's a really important time to be having these conversations. And I really do think you are at the forefront of that. I'd really love as well, you kind of talked about how you're moving into slow living and how that's really poignant and shaping your life. So for anyone who doesn't really know about that kind of movement, what would you say about it really?
Well, I think slow living has been something that I've had to become friends with. It's not an easy, it's never been something that's just like, oh, actually I'm going to just go slow and like chill. Like for me, I'm, and to be honest, I'm still struggling with the concept of it, because
in my whole career, in my whole of my 20s, it was all about work, work, work. And it was one cup that I was constantly filling up because it gave me so much and it didn't make sense to not fill it up. And I also had all the time to do so and zero other responsibilities. So I was in a very privileged position to make work my priority. I was also congratulated for the work ethic that I had. So there you're getting more positive reinforcement. And it also allowed me to be one of the first, be the first in my family to, you know, buy their own property and travel the world and be this freelance life that a lot of people really admired. So that for me was because I poured everything into my career. What I would stress is that that's my professional life. And before, I never was able to distinguish the difference between professional and personal because I was my brand. And so they fused and was very much integrated. And so in lockdown, again, I think this is what triggered this slow living, was unpicking my personal from my professional. And I think a brand will always be a part of me. And there will be this, I'm looking into founder product fit. So how a founder of a company can fit with the product rather than a product market fit. How does the founder really work or influence this new manifestation of a business? But for me, there's going to be clear boundaries because otherwise you're giving so much of yourself away and then really have very little for yourself. I think also being in a relationship and getting engaged in lockdown, that for me also was another contribution to other areas of happiness that I really valued. That wasn't about as much as I love the campaign work and the career that I have, there was something that was for me that was really precious and small and private that was really filling me up. So that was another area. And I'm a really big fan of diaries. I keep a diary, a daily planner. I've spoken about it a lot on my Instagram. And at the back of this planner that I've got this year, I had a sheet and I posted about it a couple of days ago called The Wheel of Life. And it says it has 8 segments of areas of your life and you sort of qualify how satisfied you are in those areas. And I was thinking about 4 years ago, maybe 2 of those areas would have been filled up and it would have been career and finances because I was working so hard and getting paid. None of the other areas were satisfying in my life. They were okay, but I definitely could have done better. And now I'm seeing my life in more of a holistic way. And it feels really counterintuitive for me because the guilt comes in when I'm resting or relaxing. And I'm why are you so guilty? You would not tell your friend that has worked all day to continue working till 1 a.m. in the morning. You'd say, chill, rest, go and run a bath or go watch a show, go and cook food, whatever it is that you enjoy. Yeah, I'm so hard on myself with that. And I think it's been a really important process to make friends with, just slowing things down and being more in the moment and not living in the future. I was listening to a podcast as well that was people that tend to live in the future are ambitious but also anxious, and people that live in the past are there was 2 other terms. I don't really live in the past, but I definitely live in the future. But I was constantly living in this ambitious but also extremely anxious space because there was always so much that needed to be done. And you never actually see what's in front of you. So I never actually got much out of those successes because I was always thinking what's next.
I totally resonate with that. There was a point in my life living off coffee and adrenaline, essentially, and just always wanting to progress, always wanting to do more. But actually, if we don't practice, I guess, gratitude and taking care of what we have right now, we don't appreciate. Years can go by. Right? Years can go by and you've had this wonderful experience, or like you say, you're in this beautiful relationship, and we can just sort of overlook those things sometimes. I think it's, I think the slow living movement's massive for a reason. I think it's so important.
And the adrenaline state as well, you can burn out your adrenals and then what? You've ruined your body. For me, slow living now is all about, yes, my professional career, but also my personal life, my health and my fitness. And rather than being on the go, go, go. It's like, how paying more attention to my body? Have I slept enough? Mm. How do those type of foods make me feel? And I was so disconnected from that because I was living so much from like my shoulders up in my head and not in the body.
Yeah, it's very much like a somatic healing way of living, isn't it? Like you really become thinking about what's the functionality of the body and the rest you need. And rest is also productive, and we need to like, that needs to be out there.
Yeah, like you can't also being peaceful with that and being peaceful with resting. I remember I could not spend any time alone and didn't know how to do it. And if I was, I was like, if I'm alone, I should be working. I can't just sit alone and watch Netflix. And like, where did that even come into my psyche that it wasn't okay? And I think it's like, who are you when you're on your own is a question that is quite confronting that not a lot of people want to maybe challenge or sit with. And I think that played into this success, which now I want success that's coming from a good place, not a place that's going to lead to burnout or that's very like short-lived. And I think that's the best way to do it, because you're not the best leaders aren't connected to things emotionally. They're not reactive. And I think if you haven't slept and you haven't eaten, you're not going to feel good and you will get too emotionally attached to little things.
It's so important. And honestly, I hear you, like sometimes, especially with women as well, like we need to be in sync with your hormones and the time of your cycle, because there are points within your cycle when you are supposed to rest for a valid reason. Have you ever read the book, The Red Tent? I talk about it quite a lot, actually.
No, what's that about?
So it's basically talks about, it's all about like the female cycle, but like back in the day, thousands of years ago, women would be during their cycle taken to this like red tent and allowed to like rest and like worshipped for that time. And like it was thought of as being really sacred. And as we've gone into modern society, we've been conditioned in a way that we just keep going. And actually you're working completely against your body. So there's no wonder you feel exhausted. You know, you reach for chocolate, you reach for all of these things because you need it. You're feeding your body. It's really interesting anyway. I think you'd like it. So,
yeah, I would, because I really only started to pay attention to my cycles and PMS in the last maybe 2 years. And throughout my whole 20s, and I would honestly be at talks and say, guys, it's really hard. I love my job, but I do find that once a month, I never know what I'm doing and I just wing it. And at that point, like I knuckle down and I try and figure it out, but you will feel unsure at least once a month. And then I realized only recently that was because once a month, my hormones were going up and down and dipping here and there. And it made me feel so destabilized. And it was nothing to do with my career and everything to do with my body. And at the time, I just put it down to the fact that I wasn't working or I wasn't good enough once a month. But in fact, it was because I was tired. It was because my hormones were playing tricks on my mind, as they do. Like I think I'm a really big fan of the School of Life and the books that they put out there.
Yeah.
And one of the chapters I was reading yesterday was all about being like a skeptic of your own thoughts. And I remember I would be so in my hormones around my time of PMS. And only recently started to embrace that and, you know, having my period on like a new moon and seeing how it synced up with the moon. And I was reading a little bit about the ancient traditions and found it fascinating because you apparently women are in their most powerful and most like clarity comes through around the time of their period. And so it's like important to sort of lean into that and unpack it.
Definitely, it's a time to be like really creative and give yourself that time. No admin.
No
leave
admin.
All the admin. Oh my goodness, there's so much information here, Jada. I can't thank you enough. I always like to try to end the episode just asking somebody what your mindset hack is. So if there's one takeaway for someone, maybe when you're struggling a little bit or you're needing that extra clarity, what do you go to?
So my thing is always get curious. I love to like understand what's going on. I find information really empowering and it allows me to take sort of control in some ways. Not that it's always about control, sometimes it's about surrender, but I think even surrendering to the fact that you don't know what you think you know is a step in the right direction. But one of my hacks is I read. I love like philosophy and psychology and sort of try to understand the psyche and why we feel the way we feel. And so get curious. I think when you're at your lowest and you feel at your worst, then that's where most rich information comes from. So sort of lean into it and know that it will pass.
Oh, I love that so much. Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for sharing all this. And what's one thing that you've got coming up that we can all look out for?
Well, I think at the moment I'm taking a really lovely, much needed break, but stay tuned for something in business, women in business, and in the mental health sector. But I don't have a timeline on that, but it'll be there. And if you want something immediately, I'm always sharing fashion and mental health tips on my Instagram.
Yeah, she's got a gorgeous Instagram account. I will share everything in the show notes so people can connect with you. Thank you so much for your time, Jada. It's been amazing. Oh,
thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Jada, for taking part in the podcast today. As you all have heard, she is an inspiration. She is truly, truly inspiring to me. Her energy, her ethos, the way she looks at life, the way she communicates is so rare and it's so open. And I'm so grateful that she showed up for the Mindset and Me podcast. So you know what time it is. We're going to get really comfortable, really cozy. And it's time to begin the mini meditation for today. This meditation is obviously based around slowing down, taking that time. So I want you to just almost move where you can. Maybe you need to seek out somewhere that's a little bit more peaceful. Maybe you want to dim the lights, turn down the music, and just take a moment to breathe. Take a moment to be here. To be still, to be dedicated in your practice for today, just for a few minutes together. I want you to find a really comfortable seat, whether that means laying down, whether that means being seated, perhaps cross-legged, take your lotus pose if it's comfortable for you. However you are, I want you to find stillness and comfort. I want you to be there in this moment. And begin to draw in a few deep breaths. Just acknowledging where you are today. Acknowledging the pace you've been at today. Asking yourself just to slow down, just for a few minutes, just be here with me. Just for a few minutes. How does that feel? How does that feel? Listen to your body. Listen to your breath. Begin to feel the weight of the body. You can feel the eyelids close, the eyelids become heavy. You to focus on is the breath, the feeling when you inhale, the feeling when you exhale, the calm wave that rushes over the body, the release with the exhale, allowing yourself to let go. Allowing yourself to be here. Drawing in the breath. Slow, slow breath. Slow thoughts. Allowing yourself to be still. You deserve to be still. You deserve this time for you. Thank you so much for being here. I will see you again next week.